The date is November 20th, 1992, and we're watching Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Merry Christmas!
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past that gosh darn nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Harry to my Marv.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
And this week, we continue on with our Christmas movies, and I mean, we had him here last year for Christmas movies. That was his first appearance, I believe.
Yeah, that was the first one. Yeah,
that's right. Our Home Alone, I don't know, expert, fan favorite guest, Mr. Joel Sims. Welcome back, Joel.
Thank you for having me. Let it be known I'm putting straight to my resume. I'm editing my CV as we speak, Home Alone expert. And I'm putting you down as a reference for that one.
Right on.
Nice. Well, excited to be back.
We've got it etched onto a wax disc now that you can play on your phonograph, and it's out there as a permanent record on the old interwebs. So
we're putting it on a plaque.
That's right, one of those blue plaques that you find around London. So this week we're looking back at November 1992 when the movies in theaters were Bram Stoker's Dracula, Passenger 57, Malcolm X, Army of Darkness, and, of course, our movie for today, Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, which earned $359 million on a $28 million budget.
And, as always, we'll be throwing spoilers at you like Kevin throws bricks to the head, so if you don't want to get hit with one, please press pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
The look on Joel's face when I said $359 million, I mean, it was a popular movie. Everyone was clamoring for this sequel to the point that when they were filming the stuff in the airports, O'Hare Airport wasn't able to close down. So they had to remain running while the movie was being filmed. And they had to hire extra security to keep away fans and paparazzi from Macaulay Culkin. Like, oh, wow. I mean, like 1992... Oh my God, he was everything. He was the Bieberist at that time, you know?
I think yes. He was like bigger than Bieber. Like there's that Time magazine cover that's Michael Jordan, Michael Jackson, and Macaulay Culkin on the
that's
front.
True.
Like, well, that's
true.
Yeah. That's the 90s right there. You know? That's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost of the 90s from my perception.
Which is which, though?
I think we know who the Holy Ghost is, and I think we know who the Son is. I'm not going to...
Okay.
You know, I think the crazy thing for me is, like, O'Hare Airport, in order to shoot there, they actually named it after Kelly O'Hara. She commanded it in her waiver.
America's favorite Canadian, Catherine O'Hara, gets an airport named after her. So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I've got five. First, start spreading the news. New York is a real scream.
That sounds like Jesus. That sounds like the tagline for the Friday the 13th movie where Jason goes to New York, not Home
Jason
Alone
takes
2.
Yeah. Second up, I've got he's up past his bedtime in the city that never sleeps.
No, that's so lame.
Well, see, I mean, it could have been even worse. It could have been like, it's the Big Apple and he's fighting off a couple bad ones or something. I don't know. I don't know.
Like, the Big Apple's got a couple bad seeds.
There you go. That's what I'm looking for. Yeah. I mean, just they're leaning into the New York thing. Number three, though, yikes, I did it again.
Okay. You did, Kevin. Good job.
That famous Britney Spears song, Yikes, I Did It Again. Is that what it...
Oops.
Oh, damn. Shit. Okay. Number four, first he was home alone. Now he's lost in New York. Phoning it in. Come on.
Yeah, okay.
However, it is the only Home Alone in the series that does not take place with the protagonist in their own home. And have you seen the ads for the new Home Alone with Ellie Kemper as one of the criminals?
I haven't seen that one. Certainly wish I didn't.
Yeah, it's Home Sweet. It's called Home Sweet Home Alone.
Okay. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the Home Alone franchise ends after this movie. So I've never gone past it.
No. Well, okay, let's bring it home, and can't say we're bringing it home strong. Last tagline: guess who's alone in New York this Christmas?
I mean, it's weirdly the best one, but it's not great.
But they may not be the best descriptions of this movie. So let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
All right, guys, I'm not going to lie. I think this might be one of my best ones.
Okay.
Especially considering I felt last year I was a bit disappointed because I'd watched Home Alone so many times that I thought I didn't even need to prepare anything. I could just do it on the spot, and it didn't really go as well as I'd hoped. So I'm pretty proud of this one.
Okay.
Normally, these things probably come in at around 20 seconds, but this one might be a little longer. All right. The McAllisters are at it again. After his brother's prank makes him look a fool, Kevin relieves himself of whatever feelings of goodwill and love for his family he acquired through the mishap that was last Christmas, and wishes to be rid of them once more. Fate intervenes in the form of his father Peter, who doesn't understand how alarm clocks work when they're unplugged, and cue the comedy. The McAllisters once again wake up late for their vacation flight, and this time, while they remember to bring Kevin, they manage to lose him in the airport, and he mistakenly gets on a flight to New York instead of wherever the hell they were going in Florida. Once he arrives in the Big Apple, Kevin is momentarily unnerved by his situation but turns it around pretty quickly and decides to carpe that diem. With his father's credit cards and wad of cash in hand, Kevin checks into one of New York's fanciest hotels where he unknowingly meets the future president of the United States and spends time perfecting his cannonball while keeping the hotel staff in the dark about his situation. Little does Kevin know that his nemesis, the wet, now sticky bandits, Marv and Harry, are also in NYC, having escaped from prison. When their paths cross, the bandits vow revenge, and Kevin must do what he does best in order to save Christmas and stop them from robbing a charitable toy store. Will Kevin be able to make it out of New York alive? Will his parents finally be reported to Child Services? Did this movie succeed in making the talk boy the must-have item of 1992? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Bravo.
Nice. Yeah, we're looking at about a 90-second synopsis on that one, but it was worth it. Totally worth it. Yeah, the talk boy actually did not exist before this movie.
Yeah, I read that. It was created for this movie.
Yeah, and then it became... It was probably the must-have toy of 1993. I doubt they had it out on shelves in 92. But, yeah, Home Alone, I love this movie. I remember seeing this in theaters. I was, several of those $359 million. But I realized that I am far more familiar with the first movie. Once I watched this, I forgot the whole opening bit, the whole reason Kevin gets in trouble. But I forgot that whole pageant scene.
Oh, yeah.
But like Home Alone last year, I was basically quoting along with it. But I think it's been a long time since I've seen this movie. But, it's still Home Alone. And it's, a few weeks ago, we gave Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey credit for going completely outside of the formula and everything like that. I realized on this viewing just how closely they tried to match the first movie when made this movie. It's
the exact same.
Yeah.
It's the same movie.
Yeah. It really is. Yeah. So what about you, Joel? What kind of experience do you have with Home Alone 2?
I was very similar to you in that I was like, oh yeah, Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. I remember this movie from when I was a kid. I remember I enjoyed it. This is going to be great. And I'd completely forgotten almost the entirety of it.
Yeah.
Distinctly remembered a couple scenes, vividly. I remembered the toy store, and I remembered Harry and Marv getting knocked down the stairs by the big pipe. I remember the nail gun gag.
Yeah.
But other than that, I'm like, this movie, it was like a in a way, if I didn't know that this, if this wasn't like a Home Alone thing, I'd feel like it was like a sleeping pill. Like I took too much like NyQuil and I tried to remember the first Home Alone. But like I listened to too much Frank Sinatra the night before and I tried to think about, you know, I had a fever dream of it. Because it's, like, it's almost the exact same, like beat for beat.
Yeah. So, Colin, if you were ranking Home Alone movies, because as we established last year, Home Alone is like your all-time favorite Christmas movie, or one of at least. If you had to rank the two Home Alones, where does Home Alone 2 Lost in New York fall for you? And what is your history as well with this movie?
I mean, I think that Home Alone is a solid second, and by a lot, compared to the original. Like... the original Home Alone is a masterpiece, and I think I was in the same boat as you. I also realized that watching this movie, I've seen Home Alone 1 probably like thousands, at least 1,000 times I've seen that movie. But Home Alone 2, I've probably only seen, I was thinking of like maybe a handful of times. I'm not
like
the type of...
It's like a 5-to-1 ratio kind of
thing. Yeah, basically. Like, I'm not the type of person to... Like, I watch Home Alone and I'm satisfied. I don't immediately think, okay, let's throw on Home Alone 2 and keep the party going, you know? And so yeah, the ratio is skewed heavily in Home Alone's favor.
Yeah. I know that I went downstairs, and I think we've mentioned on this show that I've got like a couple thousand DVDs. At this point, I know how pointless DVDs are, but it's the integrity of the collection. And I went down to grab my Home Alone 2 Lost in New York DVD to realize that I do not own Home Alone 2 Lost in New York on DVD. I only own the first one. And so I'm like, well, thank God for Disney Plus.
Yeah.
but that's how insignificantly I think of this movie, I guess, compared to the first one. Is the first one's worth grabbing. The second one was probably in like a $5 bin at Walmart, and I've still never purchased it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, yeah, I was just, there was a bunch of it I didn't remember. Basically, the scene that I remember the most of the entire movie is the scene when he first sees the pigeon lady, and he's just like, gross. And gross. Runs away. Yeah. Like, it's so mean and just like insensitive. But
yeah.
I didn't remember a lot of the hotel stuff. Like, I don't know, one of you said it, but it's like I did. I kind of remember the movie in bits and pieces, but I didn't really remember what the through line was. Or even really how Harry and Marv came back to be in the picture. Or like what ultimately Kevin was trying to stop them from doing. I completely had forgot about how the toy store figured into that end of things. So
yeah, the showdown in the house was kind of what I remembered best in the movie. I remembered the bricks. I remembered the climbing up the garbage chute tube thing. Like I remember things like that. And like Joel said, the pipe that knocks them both into like the cellar of this house. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was the same way. Is that yes? A lot of that other stuff, no, not so much.
Yeah, I think that there wasn't a whole lot about this movie that I found was exceptionally memorable or like really stuck. But I noticed there was a lot less focus on the family in this one. Like I find in the first one, the reason it works so well is because you don't spend as much time just hanging around with Kevin, getting up to the same old antics. Like, yeah, he can move the doll to look like it's having a shower.
Yeah.
Whereas like you focus on like the mom and like the heart of the story in that way. And then like she, you know, she goes on the bus and tours across, you know.
Yeah, her trying to get home
to Kevin.
Yeah.
And that makes it a much more interesting story because it's like the story coming together in two ways. Whereas this one, it's like they're hanging out in a hotel room and then they fly back and then she runs around the city and that's like the extent of it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I felt like the family, the other side of things, the B story, there wasn't really one. No. There wasn't like, you weren't really like attached to the mom and you didn't really, like in Home Alone, you kind of feel like her sense of like guilt, her like need to get back. And this one, they're kind of just like... It's not really until the end when she finally gets to New York, then you have a little bit of it, but for the rest of the movie, it doesn't really come as through as strong.
Yeah, a lot of those scenes were actually added because Catherine O'Hara was like, I don't feel like my character is doing enough to find Kevin. And so they added in some of those scenes where she's running around New York a little bit more. Like, it's just, and it's, you're right, it's because they don't have her traveling home, and that is such an emotional part of the first story. And that's where you get the great John Candy cameo, who was apparently supposed to have a cameo in this as well. And I don't know why he didn't end up with the cameo, but yeah, it's just like, that's what you needed, is you needed more of that struggle. Yeah. And like, come on, like, the McAllisters can't have a good Christmas. Kid being left behind or going missing, notwithstanding, I'm talking about, like, they get to Florida and it's just raining the whole time. So they are stuck in the hotel room. Like, they can't be off having fun as well. Yeah. Like, you know, it just, you got to feel bad for all these McAllisters, even though
it's,
you know,
against the rules.
Uncle Frank's still an asshole.
Yeah. The McAllisters, like, I don't really understand their dynamic. I mean, every time I see that house, I'm immediately just in awe of how beautiful it looks and how, like, rich they must be. I think we talked about this a little bit in the last one, but it's just like, Peter McAllister must be absolutely loaded. Like, I don't know how the man affords to basically pay for 20 people to fly everywhere. Like, he just pays for everybody's Christmas vacation every year, it seems.
Like, no problem.
And Uncle Frank is his brother, right?
Yeah, I think so,
yeah. Not Kate's? Yeah. And so it's just like, why do you put up with this asshole brother of yours as well?
Yeah, this freeloader.
Yeah, it's so ungrateful. But, well, okay, I haven't had my chance to say my usual. Alrighty, let's jump into Home Alone 2 Lost New York, directed by Chris Columbus, produced by John Hughes, written by John Hughes. And there we go. That's out of the way, because that's housekeeping that's been in every episode. I just got to get that out there. So, yeah, let's continue on here. We open this, once again, very Harry Potter-sounding opening music and the iconic little blue house. And we see the McAllister house, once again, is a flurry of activity. And, yeah, like Colin said in his 60-second synopsis, Peter McAllister doesn't understand how plugs work, right? That clock needs power. Like, I don't know if I believe the circumstances that allow them to sleep in once again as much, or is that just to give us the old bait and switch so that you think that the exact same thing is going to happen? Like, you know,
well, yeah.
Because they do the same thing with Macaulay Culkin in the front seat of the van at that one point too, where it's the old bait and switch. Wait, where's Kevin? And he turns around in the seat, you know, like...
Yeah. The thing I found harder in this movie, and I kind of, now I want to go watch Home Alone just to see if it's as obvious. I feel like the beginning of this movie is so, every scene is like, it's as if the scene is saying, hey, look, it's happening again. Hey, look, it's good. They unplugged it. Look, the clock is blinking. It's, they're going to sleep in again. Just you wait.
It's as if they really wanted to hammer home. They're like, this is the Home Alone sequel. This is the sequel to that movie that you enjoyed, and you're going to enjoy it again.
Well, and I mean, just how many things from the first movie do they throw in where it's just like, where it really is, you know, hey, look, it's the same thing. Like, I mean, the bronze statue gets hit by the van.
Yeah.
Joel mentioned the clown in the shower being just like all the other animatronic things that he does. You know, now we've got angels with even filthier souls that, you know, and we're doing the exact same machine gun gag. And, you know, like, just on and on and on where, you know, the paint cans even. Where it's just like, oh,
marble gag with a pearl necklace again. It was just all the same points.
And
I think that's the I found it almost offensive as a viewer.
I felt like
the movie was disrespecting me, and that it just had no regard for my intelligence, my ability to, like, you know, enjoy media in a way that's new and fresh. They were like, we're not being creative at all. You're gonna take this fucking movie and we're gonna jam it down your throat and you're gonna love it. You're gonna ignore the fact that you watched this neurotic mother go across the country to save her son in the last movie, and then immediately less than a year later she's like, man, fuck this kid, go hang out upstairs alone by yourself, whatever. Ignore it. I feel like we could have just done it in a more interesting and more creative way, as if the show, like, they were super prepared, like almost like apocalypse prepper type prepared.
Yeah. So, like that's
nothing, how
nothing
is gonna,
like,
go wrong.
Yeah.
Like, they should have had like 6 alarm clocks in their room and just like things like that to show that it's like they're really over prepared. Done something different, something new.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, totally. I felt like they should have like somebody should have been on Kevin the entire time. And even the thing in the, when they finally get to the airport, like, I'm sorry, but if you have this herd basically, and you're a parent, one parent stays at the end. Like, yeah. you wouldn't stop and just be like, oh hey, I think there's batteries in the bag, and then be like, you would have stopped at some point and looked. I don't care how late for your flight you are, you would have stopped at some point and looked back to make sure that kid was there or kept him in front of you.
Or just here, Kevin, take my hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, or that.
The baggage carousel joke where they pass the bag, give this to Kevin, give this to Kevin, give this to Kevin. Kevin's not here. Yeah, it's just like, you know, it's a fun moment when you see the reaction from them where, oh, no, Kevin's not here.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute, Kevin, right? You know, but
yeah.
There we go. There's another, you know, the Kevin scream. But yeah, I mean, it gives us a funny moment. But again, you're right. Someone should have been on that kid, like white on rice. I mean,
it just made it feel so forced, where it was like, you as a viewer know that this just shouldn't have happened, given the entire arc of the last movie.
Yeah.
It's like they just took all of that and they just threw it away. I feel like they could have done it, like I said earlier, in a way where they were so overprepared that caused the problem somehow. Yeah. I led into this plot.
Yeah.
Instead, it was like, nope, they're just they're blumbering idiots again.
Well, and they did still try to plug as many holes as possible, like the collision at the ticket gate where all the tickets disappear. And
But even that was insulting to me, because at first I was kind of like, oh, well, how's he going to get on the plane with the boarding pass? Like, literally, I was thinking this, and then he like bumps into this girl, and they're like, and I mean, I guess it's a pre 9/11 world, but the idea that you would just take a kid and be like. Like, go find
your dad.
Do you see your dad? Go find a seat.
Yeah.
And how they mask that he doesn't realize he's flying to New York because the guy speaks French to him, so he puts his headphones on so he can't hear the flight attendant.
Yeah.
All these little like happenstance things that happen that, or even the fact that they have to state like, oh well, couldn't you have got a seat together? And then the mom is like, no, you'd be lucky to even get a seat at this time. So like they've created this scenario where we know that they're all space, they could all be spread out all over. So when he gets on the plane, it's not unreasonable for him to think like, oh well, why don't I see my family? Like, it's just,
yeah. But like with the tickets spilling, it's like, well, his would be the only one that is still in the little folder. Because every other ticket that she has would have just been like the carbon copy, right?
Yeah.
I think that that scene also had the most understandable moment, because I think the biggest thing that this movie really drilled home for me is how much I fucking hate Kevin MacAllister. This kid sucks. He's so annoying. Oh, he frustrated the hell out of me. Except for when a French person talked to him and he went, I don't have the time for this. I went, I get it, Kevin. I get it. He went, I just don't have the capacity.
Yeah. I agree. Like, I didn't have as much sympathy for Kevin in this one. Like, I didn't have as much care for him as this one as I did in the first one. And I think it's because when he's left home alone, I'm like, oh yeah, it would be scary to be lost in New York, but whatever. Like, but it's just like, there's kind of the conceit that for a moment, he actually thinks, he doesn't realize he's been left home alone. Like, he actually thinks that he made his family disappear with a wish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where in this one, when he gets to the thing and he's like, my family's in Florida and I'm in New York. And then he does his little eyebrow raise or whatever.
Yeah.
it just didn't play as well.
Yeah, the first one, he goes into survival mode.
Yeah.
He just has to survive. Whereas this one, I mean, this kid's going to grow up to be like some sort of sociopath or something. I mean, he has like absolutely no moral objections to the fact that he's just racking up all these bills. I mean, okay, he's 10. Maybe he doesn't understand how room service works, for example. But on the other hand, he comes up with those lies pretty quickly at the front desk of his dad is in the meeting. Like, he's got a better airtight story than this movie has. But like his whole thing about my dad's in meetings, he'll be in later, he wants me to check in. Oh, I don't like hanging out at the office because it's boring. he comes up with this on the fly, the idea to record the credit card number and everything like that and slow it down on his Talkboy. It's like, this is straight up criminal behavior.
Yeah. And
he's only 10.
Again, and it's like, and the biggest thing is like, the whole lesson of the last movie is he's like, you know what, Kevin actually likes his family. The whole plot of this movie happens because Kevin goes, actually, fuck him.
Yeah, exactly. On second thought.
It's been 11 and a half months and I hate these sons of bitches. Yeah. I am in New York. Like, at least in the first one, to my memory, the first one, like, he tries to get help too. Once he realizes, like, oh, like, he didn't make him disappear. Like, he tries to, like, get help. And in this one, nah, he's like, I am, like you said, he's being a sociopath. I'm gonna go lie my way into this nice hotel. I'm gonna order room service. I'm not gonna contact a soul, and nobody can stop me.
Yeah, I'm going off grid, man. Yeah, I just, like, don't give a fuck.
Yeah, like, you can't tell me that inside of his dad's backpack, his dad, who appears to be the organizer of this trip, there's not information for the hotel that they're staying at in Florida. There's not, like, a phone number he could call.
Solid point.
In Florida to try to reach his parents.
Yeah. No, all that there is a wad of what we can only assume is unlimited money, because it doesn't seem to run out the entire movie. Like, that's it. It's an empty duffel with just unlimited cash.
With the McAllisters, though, I don't know if I feel sorry for Buzz, though. Because, I mean, Buzz is even worse in this movie. He's such an asshole. So, like, I mean, first of all, there's the Christmas pageant. And, like, the choir, Buzz is, like, the biggest guy in the choir. There's only one other guy that looks like his age. What is this school? Is it, like, a K-12 school or something? Because Buzz looks so much bigger than all the other kids in the choir.
I think that Buzz has just failed the fourth grade 6 times.
Yeah.
Like, he's in it for the long haul.
He's like Nelson Muntz. He reminds me of the bullies from The Simpsons who are just like, I swear they're like 20 years old and they're still in elementary school.
Yeah.
I think the choir scene, sorry, that you bring up, I think it really nailed home the fact for me that I'm like, oh, it's not just Kevin. Every person in this movie is a psycho, except for the characters that they want you to be like, these people are awesome.
Yeah.
Imagine being in that audience as an adult and you're like, look, the kid put two candles behind the other kid's head. And you're, like, slapping your knee. You're, like, howling in laughter. Like, this is the funniest thing you've ever seen in your life. You're like, this kid, get fucked. Well, I don't like you, short blonde one. Big beefy guy is playing the drums on your head. This is the pinnacle here.
Yeah. See, that's the kind of stuff that made, like, Gallagher and Carrot Top famous in the 80s was this prop-type humor. So, I mean, we know how hilarious they are. That it doesn't surprise me that this crowd is going nuts.
Yeah,
yeah. That I was, mean, that, hold on, that you was... crushed that watermelon.
that was the only scene where I kind of felt bad for Kevin. And I honestly think Home Alone 2 would have been better if it was like Kevin was trapped home. The family forgot Uncle Frank and Kevin, and then Kevin just terrorized Uncle Frank the entire time because Uncle Frank is the biggest asshole, I think, maybe in all of film. Like, that guy needs to get wrecked.
Well, yeah, because what is it that he screams? Get out of here, you little puke? Is that what it is? Or
You little pervert.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and they allude to a line that you don't actually see happen. But, like, when he's sitting there talking with his mom, he says he can't go into the bathroom because Uncle Frank's in there taking his shower. And he says, if I saw him naked, I'll grow up never feeling like a real man. Whatever that means is what he says. But it's just like, I mean, like, Frank McAllister also has a very high opinion of himself.
Yeah, so stupid.
One of the insults Buzz uses, going back to Buzz just for one more quick sec, is trout sniffer. What is a trout sniffer?
I don't know what that means.
I gotta say, I'm such a fan of, like, it's a very 90s, very John Hughes trope as well. Have you ever insulted anybody in that way? The way that people do in 90s movies, they're like, hey, screw you, booger breath, trout sniffer, like, stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Can you imagine if you try, if you unironically insulted somebody by saying that? You just get told, no.
I'll try trout sniffer now, yeah.
Next time, yeah.
So, the pigeon lady is just the new shovel guy, isn't she?
Yeah.
But even her, I find less compelling. Like,
oh, absolutely.
The shovel guy's story with his son was like, it just really tugged at your heartstrings. Her story of, correct me if I'm wrong, but her story is she got divorced and couldn't handle it, or like she fell in love and the guy didn't like her anymore and dumped her, and she decided
something like that yeah.
pigeons were now her love.
Yeah.
I really liked her sad story of, you know, because the shovel guy, like his story, it felt very real. It felt very grounded. Like I was like, it's a very human thing. Like your relationship with your son fell apart. It ruined your, you know, your whole night, your whole thing.
Yeah.
Whereas this lady, she's like, yeah, I got divorced. I'm heartbroken. Now I'm the pigeon lady in Central Park.
Yep.
And I live in the New York Philharmonic. I don't feel as bad for you when somehow you've managed to weasel your way into a residency at the New York Philharmonic, where she lives, and nobody's found her. Right above the crowd. I did feel a little bit bad for her, because she did say, I haven't talked to anybody in years, or spoken to anybody in years. And can you imagine, you've basically taken like a post-divorce trauma vow of silence, and the first person that you talk to is Kevin McAllister. Come on, that's rough. And he's just being a little shit. He's trying to be like, oh, I'm wise beyond my years. And it's like, no, you're just annoying.
Especially when it's like, she says at one point, like, people don't notice her, nobody sees her. And literally, so Kevin is the first person to acknowledge her existence in a seemingly very long time. And the first words he says to her are, ew, gross, and runs away. Like, yeah. I think that what that was missing is the shovel guy's story mirrors Kevin's story with his family. Like, the shovel guy basically, like, teaches Kevin to kind of reconsider his outlook on his family and how he feels about them by using his own story. Mm-hmm. Whereas, again, the problem in this movie is that Kevin has learned nothing now from the shovel guy. So, like, even the shovel guy is retconned to kind of being a non-factor, and there's nothing that the pigeon lady's story really connects to at all in the overarching theme of the movie.
And Kevin's just got, like, goldfish memory. That's all it is. You know, it was a year ago. How is he going to remember that?
Yeah, he's 10 now. Come on. What do you expect to remember 9? Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, he is also nice enough to give her one of those turtle doves and saying, don't worry, I'll always remember you. And it's like, how about, like, invite her in for some breakfast and a hot shower instead?
Oh, yeah. You buy her a meal.
Yeah. Oh, here's a Christmas ornament.
how about instead of giving her the turtle dove, you give her the turtle dove inside of that wad of cash?
Like, look at the you know, difference, because the final shot of the movie is him giving her that turtle dove, you know, to this homeless lady who really did him a big favor and, like, saved his life.
Yeah.
And then you hear his dad go, you spent $1,000 on room service.
Like, $967. I have a breakdown of what's on that list if you want to hear it. 2 chocolate cakes, 6 chocolate mousses with chocolate, vanilla and strawberry ice cream topped with M&Ms, chocolate sprinkles, cherries, nuts, marshmallows, caramel syrup, chocolate syrup, strawberry syrup, whipped cream, and bananas, 6 custard flans, a pastry cart, 8 strawberry tarts, and 36 chocolate-covered strawberries. You know, he's feeling a little romantic, too. So, I mean, he does at least have some fruit in there. He's got bananas and strawberries, so... You know, it's not all unhealthy.
Yeah, not at all. He's fine. He's covering the food group. I think I was looking into this, and I was thinking about it. And I think that the original bill for, like, the cost of his room service, I was looking at all that stuff. I'm like, at a nice hotel, I'm like, that probably cost him way more. I think he got off with a really good deal, because I think originally that would have cost probably like $3,000 or something like that. Something crazy. But they realized he had to interact with Rob Schneider, and they went, oh, fuck. So they knocked $2,000 right off of it for the trauma that he endured.
Oh, poor Rob Schneider. Come on. He's not that bad. He tipped him gum.
Delicious. That's all he deserved.
But, you know what kind of gum he tipped him with? Well, let's find out in Sponsorship Corner!
Wrigley's Spearmint.
No, it's actually called Fruit Stripe Gum.
Oh.
So, always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Home Alone 2 Lost in New York is brought to you by Coca-Cola. You may recall that the first is littered with Pepsi instead of Coke, except for there was one single Coke can when he sets up the party mannequins and everything. You know, one of those mannequins is holding a Coke can. So, but this movie is everything Coke, except for the point when Kevin has just spoken to Ally Sheedy in the airport, and he's looking out all somber over New York, and there is a very prominently displayed Pepsi Cola sign. So I guess they got them back for the accidental placement in Home Alone 1. But let's see. Ram Golf, Wilson, Spalding, Avis Rent-A-Car, American Airlines, Good Housekeeping, Cosmopolitan, and Glamour Magazines, the Chicago Sun-Times, Dodge and GMC, Chanel, Visa, Polaroid, and Canon, Bergdorf Goodman, Symphonic VCR, Fruit Stripe Gum, Eagle Ridged Potato Chips, Naturipe Fruit, Craftsman Tools, Lincoln Electric Arc Welder, Iowa, JVC, Suntory Whiskey, Sbarro, TDK Cassette Tapes, Kwong Yueng Xing and Company, The Empire Diner. It's a real place. It's like an Asian Heritage Museum or something. The Empire Diner, St. Anne's Children's Hospital, and the Plaza Hotel. Plus, Monster Sap Soap and the Talk Boy, which, when this movie came out, they were fictional products, but both became real products eventually. And also the real movies, It's a Wonderful Life and How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and the fictional movies of The Ventilator, Flybait, Muttville Massacre, and Angels with Even Filthier Souls. And finally, the fictional companies of Red Hot Frankenfurters, which I'm not entirely sure if it is fictional, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was like a cheeky homage to Tim Curry's Rocky Horror character. Villa de Dolphine, a motel, and Duncan's Toy Chest. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Duncan's Toy Chest is, where are the toys in Duncan's Toy Chest? Like, you walk in there and it's all these wooden things and stuff like that that you can play with. Like, where's the shelf of Barbies? You know, like, where's the pink section? Where are all the Hot Wheels? Like, it's all like...
No, it's like an old English toy shop with, like, he's a literal toy maker who only sells his own... like handmade toys.
Yeah.
That's exactly the vibe I was getting. It looks like an overgrown Christmas village.
Yeah. Yeah. And I read that like the kids were allowed to, like all the background kids were allowed to keep their favorite toy as part of their salary when they filmed the scene. And it's like, well, what toys? Like Macaulay Culkin kept the Talk Boy, but like everyone else, it's like, oh, thanks for the Raggedy Ann doll. I mean, come on, it's the 90s. It's not the 40s. This isn't A Christmas Story. It's not those toys. Like,
yeah, I guess.
So I mentioned in there, I mentioned Tim Curry. Oh boy, Colin, we've hit our hat trick with Tim Curry on this show.
I know, I was going to say, this is probably the only Tim Curry movie I'd watched before 2021.
I read, it's never actually said, but his name is Hector in the movie. And the desk lady, her name is Hester. So that's what their names are.
I really liked the, I'm with Joel on, I'm not the biggest fan of Rob Schneider. I don't know if, I mean, I did like Deuce Bigalow, American Gigolo, but,
Well, he does a lot of cultural appropriation.
Yeah.
That I think he feels like he can get away with because he's like a quarter Filipino, but, you know, he's not always doing Asian characters when he's doing his "you can do it" guy and stuff, you know? Yeah.
The woman is, that's Professor McGonagall, right? Or no?
No.
No?
No.
I could have swore it was her.
No. No, the actress's name is Dana Ivey is who plays Miss Hester Stone, but no. Because Sister Act would have been around the same era, and she looked like Professor McGonagall in Sister Act, if you remember. We made the comment about Maggie Smith never ages.
Yeah. She's I think she's been 67 since she popped out the womb.
Yeah.
Man, I'm shocked. I thought that was her for sure.
No, but I can totally see where you see that, yeah. But they were fun side characters, though. I mean, Rob Schneider aside, for Joel's sake, but, you know, the Tim Curry and Dana Ivey, they were a lot of fun, I thought.
Listen, the way that you're saying, except for Rob Schneider, for Joel's sake, has a slight implication that you are a big fan of Rob Schneider. Like, you watched the movie Big Stan, and you were like, yeah.
Big Stan.
This is cinema right here.
That's a deep cut. Oh, my God. No, I don't hate... you know, what it is because he was on The Masked Singer this year. And
oh, wow.
Within like, 4 bars of music, I knew it was him.
And so I was so proud that I guessed Rob Schneider and I was right. So
I think that's where a lot of it stems from. Right now, I've got a fondness for Rob Schneider because I'm like, yeah, I fucking nailed that one. I got a Masked Singer finally. I've only ever had, like, 2 ever in my life.
I watched the first season. I nailed T-Pain on the second episode. And that's really? My only claim to fame. That's my lone claim to fame.
Yeah, for me, Tommy Chong was the one that I'm like, oh, that's 100% Tommy Chong. As soon as he opened his mouth, yeah.
Yeah.
I also thought at one point, like when he gets into the limo, I thought that maybe the limo driver was James Gandolfini. I'm like, no, it can't be, right? But it's not. I looked it up. But the guy's name, the actor's name, is Mike Goldfinger. How fucking cool is that?
That's a sweet name.
Like, and the Times Square cop, his name is Ron Canada. Are you fucking kidding me right now?
That's a stage name. That's a. We found this guy on the street, and he looked like he was good for this part, and he just needed a stage name. So he's
the Times Square cop because he was actually in Times Square when they're like, hey, we need a cop for this scene that Catherine O'Hara wants us to throw in. Right? They're like, here, put this on. What's your name? I'm Ron Canada. I'm one of the Elmos that you can hug in Times Square.
Like, how much money are we willing to bet that Ron Canada's only credit is Home Alone?
No, it's not. It's not. I didn't look at a lot of his stuff, but there were definitely at least 3 that I could see.
He was in Wedding Crashers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think it's just a stage name, because like, I bet that his real name is like, he was like, man, I'm auditioning for the union, I need to have a good name. My real name of Donald United States of America just doesn't roll off the tongue. Oh, I've got it.
Man. Ron Canada has had a pretty esteemed career.
Yeah.
He was on The Shield. He was on The West Wing.
Oh, wow.
He was on Boston Legal, The Strain, House of Cards. He's on the Orville, apparently.
Huh.
Good for you, Ron.
Yeah. Ron Canada. There you go.
Well, Mike Goldfinger's got to be a stage name, too, then, right? I mean, there's no way there's actually, you can flip open your phone book and find all the Goldfingers listed, is there?
I openly encourage anybody who's listening to this podcast at the moment to go find Ron Canada on Twitter or Facebook or something. Say the guy's from, I used to like this one, loved your performance in Home Alone 2.
Well, Pigeon,
Pigeon Lady's name is Brenda Fricker. That's that actress's name, Brenda Fricker.
Good for her.
Yeah.
All those Mormon swears.
That mother fricker. Yeah.
Nice. I mean, for the little, once I remember, like, the little that I remember of this movie, I thought more of it took place in the hotel. I thought the stuff in the hotel was a bigger part of the movie, but it wasn't.
I agree. Yeah, I feel like in my memory, like, it was far more substantial. Like, in my memory, somehow, I feel like I'd crossed the streams of the antics at, like, his uncle Rob's house and, like, the hotel. So in my brain, I was like, I think that they do, like, Home Alone-type hijinks in the hotel somehow.
Yeah.
That was, like, that was a cross wire.
Well, I even remembered the Donald Trump cameo being a little bigger. I mean, that motherfucker can act, yo! I mean, whoo! Donald Trump, man! Apparently, and this may come as a real shock to you, because he's such an upstanding dude, but apparently he bullied his way into this cameo, because he was actually the owner of the plaza at the time, and like that was his caveat. Is it's like you can use this hotel to film, because they filmed in the plaza. Like mm-hmm. none of that is soundstage. So
it's like you know, I can be in this hotel, but I gotta have a cameo.
Yeah.
One story that I have locked and loaded, though, for this moment, talking about Donald Trump for a second, that I have a Donald Trump story that my father once told Donald Trump to go fuck himself. And I've never been so proud of my father until I heard this story. And what it was, so I mean, we're on the topic of owning hotels. My dad used to be like the CFO of a major construction company, and Donald Trump was wanting to build a Toronto Trump Tower. And so he had a meeting with Donald Trump, and I guess he didn't like the budget that my dad put forward, because apparently he's a bit of a cheap man and, you know, likes to cut corners and stuff like that. And my dad said, no, we refuse to cut those corners, and said, you can take your big shiny building and shove it up your ass. Go fuck yourself. And walked out on him. That was I'm proud to be my father's son at that moment. And I only found out about that story a few years ago, but it's like, nice. Hell yeah, Dad.
You know, Sean, I think that was a catalytic moment. He said, oh, this Canadian fucker is going to tell me I can't build my hotel here. He's going to tell me to fuck off. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to become the president of the United States of America, the leader of the free world. And then I'm going to say that Canada is more of a national security threat than China.
Just going to say, dad's fault.
Your dad is at least 80% responsible for the dissolution of NAFTA.
Oh, now I have to cut that story. two other quick plaza facts. Just apparently they took out the carpet in the lobby to do the stunt where Kevin slides across the floor. There was originally a carpet there and they tore it out, and Donald Trump decided he liked it without the carpet and left it. So there's a fun fact. And apparently until, you know, a few years ago, you could go to the plaza and do like the Home Alone package. And it involved a limo tour of filming locations. You got like Home Alone merch, and you got a room that was similar to Kevin's. So
did you get a cheese pizza?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And a cheese pizza. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So Ron's house. Yeah. Uncle Ron, he flips open that phone book and looks at one page and happens to find, oh, Uncle Ron lives in New York. Like, it would have been more realistic if he had been leafing through all the pages. But yeah.
But also, if Uncle Ron doesn't live just a stone's throw away from the Plaza Hotel, which, I mean, I don't know where the address was, but it didn't seem anywhere remotely close. Like, I mean, I feel like I would struggle to go to New York and try to navigate my way through the suburbs.
Yeah.
Okay. As someone, I went to New York at the start of 2020, before the world shut down, as a fully grown adult. And I had two realizations when watching this movie. One, Kevin can run at the speed of a train. In the first montage that they did, he was going to a bunch of locations that were like miles apart. And they made it seem like he made it there within like a couple minutes. So either he learned the subway system real quick, no problem, or he is like freakishly fast.
Yeah, okay.
I also realize Uncle Ron's house, I think I know where the McAllister money comes from. Just owning a single property in New York.
Yeah.
As run down, as mid renovation as that whole bit, like townhouse that they had was, probably worth like 20 mil. Easy. No problem.
You've got property in New York, you're renovating it all completely, and you're in Paris while this is happening. Like, yeah, that you're right. That's where the family money is. I mean, Uncle Ron is loaded. Like, you think Peter is, like, how come Frank isn't leeching off of Ron? Like, it sounds like Ron's got the better deal going on.
I think Ron and Peter are mobsters.
Yeah.
And then Frank is just like the runt. The runt brother who never amounted to anything except had a drug habit, maybe.
I feel like everybody in the McAllister name is way too chill about rampant property damage and destruction.
Yeah.
The amount of damage that our boy Kevin must have done to that. I know it's a rental or like renovation project, but mm-hmm. oh my God, the amount of like paint and like clear coating and like yeah. all this stuff that was just getting dumped all over the floor, just destroyed.
Yeah.
Oh my God, they're just really shit people, I guess.
Well, I was trying to figure out if the house was like, it seemed that it was kind of mid-renovation or it's just a dilapidated house. But I was kind of thrown off by the fact that seemingly part of the renovation was to just put a massive hole through the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I don't know if that's where you start. Seems like a OH&S hazard.
Yeah, I'm no renovation expert. And I mean, the hole's only there because Kevin takes all the planks away. You know, because yeah. those two planks. Like, mm-hmm. shouldn't there be safety railings up or some shit? Like...
Yeah. I just really love the implication that an entire floor in a townhouse consists of entirely like 2x4s, just a small layer of 2x4s, no insulation underneath, no ceiling, anything like that. Like, yeah, nah, couple of planks, like a pirate ship, and you're good.
It's like maybe they had termites. It's kind of reminds me of the house from Arachnophobia.
Yeah. Here we go. We've got the sticky bandits in this movie. They're not just the wet bandits. I will say, though, that I think that Marv is very funny in this movie. I was really enjoying Marv with his tape hand where he's stealing people's hats and earmuffs and everything as they're walking by. Like, it was stupid, but my God, like, it did make me laugh a couple of times.
Yeah, I felt like the most sympathetic character in this entire movie to me is Harry. I was just like, why did you not just cut, like, are they related or something? I don't understand why Harry wouldn't have just been like, hey, we got our freedom, let's cut ties, you're too much of an idiot for me to, like...
Yeah, yeah, does he owe him a life debt or something?
Yeah. Listen, we escaped from prison, we made it to New York in the back of this truck. How about we immediately go to crime? Like, immediately, yeah, exactly. With no hesitation, we're planning a heist within the next 2 days.
Yeah.
Well, at like, least... You don't want to lay low for a little bit?
Yeah,
you
at least...
You don't want to relax?
At least Danny Ocean spent all his time in prison planning his heist instead of, let's see what happens.
I also... The nature of their heist is... It's just so innate. It's so amateurish. And they even say when Harry hatches the plan, they're like... They say no one would be stupid enough to rob a toy store on Christmas Eve. So yeah. you've told the audience this is a stupid idea, but you're gonna do it anyways. And then from what I can tell, their plan was to just hide out, like sneak in, hide out yeah. in these forts until close, and then make off with the cash.
Seems solid to me.
Yeah,
back Bosch. It's that easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you say that you feel sorry for Harry. I have to say I feel sorry for Marv, because when the actual attack starts, Marv gets it far worse. Like those four bricks to the face, he's dead.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. The bricks, for whatever reason, I mean, in Home Alone, I find the paint cans very, like, really hard to stomach when they yeah. get smoked by those paint cans. But in this movie, when they get smoked by those bricks,
oh my
Marv
God.
Gets smoked by those bricks, it's cringe. Like, it's just sickening.
Yeah. Now, what I don't understand, though, they've got Kevin cornered up on the roof, and they say, throw down the camera, and we won't hurt you. And so they knew that Kevin was going to throw something. Why did he just move out of the way instead yeah. of, you know, like trying to catch it? Like, why, you know, they knew something was coming down. They didn't know it was going to be a brick, but I mean, you're a fucking idiot if you didn't expect something other than the camera. But why are you so caught off guard with this? Like, fuck.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Marv gets the bricks. He's the one that gets the staple gun. He's electrocuted.
Yeah.
Marv dies.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marv should be dead.
13 times over in this movie.
Yeah.
And he is dead. All the amount of damage that gets absolutely, like, he gets demolished.
The huge bag of cement, like, you know, two-story fall with the pipe, and then they fall three stories when he lights the rope on fire. I mean, onto their backs, both of them have that. Ugh. Like, you know, Harry gets the tools on the head, you know, and the greased ladder, like...
That's brain damage.
I guess
not be realistic?
Exactly.
Well, the one that bugs me, the one that's by far the least realistic, is the teeter-totter outside of the toy chest window. when Harry jumps out, Harry jumps out and he lands on the teeter-totter, and then he's like, wait, Marv, stop! And then, like, launches him. Like, how is he getting enough air to get onto the top of this board anyway? Like, it just... That's the one that I find least realistic out of all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I found too, this was kind of where being in New York a little bit fell apart, because it's like, I like the concept of a kid trying to defend his home.
Yeah.
But a kid trying to defend the toy store and then capture them via his uncle's property, it wasn't like, it just didn't seem as noble, I guess. It didn't seem like he had the motivation or whatever.
Well, it's the only thing that does make it seem somewhat noble, I think, is because, I mean...
He's trying to defend
his
money.
He's doing it for
a
good cause. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, he grew a conscience somewhere with all these other scams that he's pulling. You know, all of a sudden, yeah, I'm going to help the kids. Here's my $20. Make sure that Mr. Duncan gives that to the kids, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just felt like it would have been better if he had stayed in the toy... If the whole end part had been in the toy store, although he would have just destroyed all the toys.
Absolute write-off.
The whole basis of, like, the first movie works on the idea of the, like, now the kid is the man of the house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Protecting his house. Like, there's a more of a motivation there.
Yeah.
Whereas for this one, there's no reason for him to lead them back to his uncle's house, really.
Yeah.
And go to the cops.
Yeah.
If you can make it back to your uncle's house, you can just go to the police station. Which, yeah, it really tells me that he really enjoys doing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he enjoys setting these traps for people and, like, messing them up. Like, he's like, this is, like, pleasure for him. This is his hobby. He's like, no, I could just go to the police. He's like, or vigilante justice.
Even to go back, the amount of times that Kevin goes to Central Park at night is like he would be murdered.
Yeah,
in a heartbeat.
Well, I mean, you know, he learned in the last movie that you can't judge a book by its cover. But like when he gets in the cab, you know, it's scary out there. Ain't much better in here, kid.
Yeah. I love the message of you can't judge a book by its cover until you see a weird lady, and then you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you can't even call her gross.
I'm disappointed, though, that when he finally does call the cops, that he doesn't do his grown-up voice that he did in the first movie. You know, like, you know, look for the fireworks.
My name is Murphy.
Yeah. But in this one, it's look for the fireworks. I'm in Central Park. But I also have to say that I think Kevin is responsible for the death of hundreds of pigeons, because the only reason that bird seed sticks to the sticky bandits is because they're covered in varnish. He just poisoned all those pigeons. Like, fuck Kevin.
He made friends with the lady that takes care of all these pigeons, and he's like, here's how I'm gonna repay you.
Yeah,
all of them are gone. Every last one of them. I'm killing all of your pigeons.
I'm going to free you from your pigeon addiction by killing them all.
But then, of course, towards the end of the movie, he ends up at Rockefeller Center. So this monologue that he performs to the Christmas tree, who's it to? Like, is he praying to Santa? Is he praying to God? Like he's treating this tree like it's a crucifix or something. Like, he says you really do work fast when his mom shows up there, but it's like, yeah, who's the deity that he is praying to in this moment looking at the giant Christmas tree?
All that I could think of during the slow pan-in shot as he was giving his monologue there was, it looked like one of those 1990s anti-drug PSAs. Like, it looked like he was about to be like, hi, I'm Macaulay Culkin. Crack is whack. like, stay in school, guys. He's like, go to the YMCA.
Oh, man. So funny.
When the family shows up in New York, first of all, I like the line from Kate McAllister of, "What kind of idiots do you have working here?" "The finest, ma'am." or the police. The police station where they're trying to explain the fact that, oh, no, we did this last year, too. We left our kid behind. And Peter McAllister says, "But it's becoming a bit of a family tradition. But go figure, we haven't lost our luggage yet." Knocks on wood.
I like that. I did like that scene a lot.
Yeah. But at the end, they're in the hotel room. And I love the shot that pans across the room where you see everybody, like, lying on various objects. And then you see Fuller in the king-size bed by himself, surrounded by Coke cans. there's another throwback from the first movie. But, yeah, I mean, Fuller had some great moments. But I don't know how I would feel, even with all this free shit that Mr. Duncan is giving. And there's another proof that it's not just his own stuff that he's selling. He's brought them, like, name brand shit. But I don't know how I would feel about these concierge staff coming into my room, letting all these toys into my room. I think they'd be extra pissed off. First you lose my son, and now you break into my room.
Big question. How are you getting it all home?
Yeah, exactly. Who's paying for that?
Oh my god, I never thought of that. They don't live here.
Oh great, you open up all these presents of, like, what, wooden trains and, like, you know.
Yeah, I kind of thought the way it was going to work is that Duncan, like, Kevin, I feel like Kevin put, like, his address or whatever on the thing so that he could pay him back or whatever. So I thought Duncan was going to mail all the presents back to Chicago or wherever it is they're from, and they would arrive home, and then the presents would be there.
Yeah. Well, and how does Mr. Duncan know so much about the McAllister family pre-Google? Yeah. I mean, because they're all labeled to the people in the family.
It's because Mr. Duncan is actually Santa, and the supernatural aspect of Home Alone remains intact.
There we go. Yeah. And I love how at the end, Buzz makes his big impassioned speech about Kevin should be the one to go first because, you know, he's the reason that they're having Christmas. And then they all start opening presents at the same time anyway. But he's got the line, the enough of this gooey show of emotion. That's the fun Buzz line, I think.
But Buzz has some good moments in this movie. I forgot to bring it up earlier, but I really love that fireplace scene when the shot just opens on it. Like, I'm sure it's making fun of some Law movie, but that's a good scene.
Yeah, and then, like, kind of ends it with top that.
Yeah. In the time between we recorded Home Alone and this, I binge watched Schitt's Creek. And I have to say that I have become a huge Catherine O'Hara fan.
Nice.
And I think that Moira Schitt might be one of the best characters I've ever seen on TV. She's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and she really didn't get much to do in this movie.
Yeah, no, she didn't. It's a travesty.
I mean, and meanwhile, like, this was one of four movies that Joe Pesci had in 1992.
I absolutely love that Joe Pesci did Home Alone, then won the Academy Award, and then came back for Home Alone 2.
Well, because this was also the year he was in My Cousin Vinny, so it's like, you know, wasn't he nominated for that one at least or something?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, I remember that was the big upset year because Marissa Tomei won, but I think, I don't know. I read that Kit Culkin, the famously asshole dad manager of Macaulay Culkin, wouldn't commit Macaulay Culkin to this film until the producers signed him to The Good Son, because the R-rated movie was to help him avoid typecasting. And so, yeah, this movie almost didn't get made with Macaulay Culkin.
If they hadn't agreed to The Good Son.
Without The Good Son? A cinematic marvel.
Yeah, but, I mean, you can't have one without the other.
True. The yin-yang.
Well, there we go. That is Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. Now, Colin, Joel, on IMDb, it scored 6.8 out of 10. It has a Metascore of 46. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 34% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 61%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a brick to the face, like a pipe to the face, like a cement bag to the face. Hit us with some reviews.
I really thought you were going for a Nacho Libre quote there. I was going to be really impressed.
Oh, no, I'm not versed enough on Nacho Libre. I have seen it, but I'm not as versed as you are on it. Why, what's the quote in Nacho Libre?
It's what is it? It's like, he's talking to the little kid, and he's like, I know it's fun to wrestle. A nice punch to the face or a pile drive to the face. Good stuff. I guess you had to be there. All right. So Rotten Tomatoes user Robert P. gave the movie 0.5 out of 5 stars and says, I do not like movies with tacky kids trying to be adult, and I did not like the first one, and I hated the second one.
Which, I mean,
if he hated the first one, I don't know why he would watch the second one.
Yeah, I'd like to see what he thinks of some of the other ones. Like, I would love to have him go, well, change of cast, maybe I'll like this new kid better.
Yeah. I like just kids being kids, damn it. Harrison R. gave the movie 4.5 out of 5 stars and says, not as good as the first one, mainly because it is filled with more dirtier tricks and over-exaggerated reactions from the wet bandits. I've got to say, though, it is really funny and feels more like a family movie than the first one did.
Wow.
You're not exactly missing out if you don't watch this one, but I think you'll get some enjoyment out of it. One of the things I was disappointed about was we never got to see Old Man Marley, Kevin's neighbor, but instead of him, we got another really cool side character, the Pigeon Lady, played by Brenda Fricker. Overall, if you like slapstick comedies, and you should watch this, as it is a hell of a ride.
That review feels like a grade 7 like book review project. You know, they're like, I got to review a movie. They're like, all right, today for class, I'm going to review Home Alone 2. It's awesome.
Well, what one that I find funny, though, is he says the more over-the-top reactions from the bandits or whatever from people. I do like that there is the one point where Kevin is running away from the wet bandits and ends up slipping on ice.
Yeah.
And he gets knocked out for a few seconds. Like, it's like the bandits take all this abuse and Kevin slips once and out cold.
Yeah. This next review is from John F. He gives the movie 1.5 out of 5 stars and says, at best, too formulaic. At worst, an absolute monster of a holiday movie. At least the original had enough appeal to work. This one is meaner and more blatantly pro-WASP and anti-Semitic and Catholic than the original. There is a right way and a wrong way to do slapstick comedy, and they did it so, so wrong in this one. Any other qualities of this film, including the on-location shots in NYC or the mother-son reconciliation between Culkin and O'Hara, get drowned out by the gross negligence of the filmmakers. Did anyone else watching this wish that Pesci had blown the little brat's brains out in Central Park? Did anyone else cringe in horror when the pigeon woman laughed as the bandits got eaten alive by 1,000 pigeons?
I read that Daniel Stern got a pigeon in the mouth at one point.
Simon F. says 4 out of 5 stars. Awesome! Also, how the fuck did they survive all that pain? Not Christmas without it. Also, my Easter bunny hanging next to Santa in my front trees, and my neighbor is looking wired. I think he meant to say weird at me. But that's a question mark. So really it says, also, my Easter bunny hanging next to Santa in my front trees, and my neighbor is looking wired at me? Whatever that means.
Thanks, man. Thanks for letting us know. Thanks for sharing.
You know, I find that less baffling, though, than anti-Semitic. I still can't get that last review out of my head where, what's anti-Semitic about this movie?
I have no idea.
They made a Happy Hanukkah Marv joke?
No, yeah!
Happy Hanukkah Harry. That was it.
No, yeah, Marv was the, yeah, Marv said Happy Hanukkah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, that's inclusive.
Exactly. That sounds Semitic to me, not anti-Semitic. Is Semitic the opposite of anti-Semitic? I don't know.
Yeah, the last one I have is May Diana R. gave the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, This kid's movie was very popular in its day. Little Macaulay Culkin was very cute and funny, smart and genius to face the criminal who tries to rob his house. The atmosphere used is the atmosphere of the Christmas holidays, which makes us excited to watch this film on weekends. But the thing that I really hated when Macaulay Culkin was growing up, his face is no longer as cute as it used to be.
Wow. That's a low blow. It's like, well, yeah, he grew up. That's how it works. Oh my God. I was watching, I watched the first episode of Chucky, and Devon Sawa is the lead in that. And it's like, oh my God, I did not know that was Devon Sawa. Like Final Destination, Devon Sawa. What happened, dude? Oh,
Casper, yeah. The friendly ghost, Devon Sawa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh yeah. He's a lot older now. And it's like, well, yeah, he's not a cute kid anymore. He's not human Casper.
Yeah. All right, that's all I got.
Right on. So yeah, 6.8 and 61 from audiences and 46 and 34 from critics. I can't say that I disagree hugely. Let's go over to Joel here. Joel, what did you think of Home Alone 2 Lost in New York
on this viewing?
Right. My review of Home Alone 2 Lost in New York is just go watch the first one. It's the same movie, but it's 10 times better. Just go watch the first one instead. You'll enjoy it. You won't enjoy this one. I did not love this movie. It's not for me. And I think that had to do with the fact that it was the exact same as the first one in a way that felt insulting. I think that it was immediately forgettable.
You know, I did read that they actually had filmed the aftershave joke again as well, and decided to cut that one. Like, that's how much that this movie is like the first one. Is there's another beat that they thought, you know what, that's one too many.
Yeah, they went, whoa, put the brakes on there, yeah. On the aftershave bit. Yeah, I think that it had some highlights. It had some fun moments. I think that Marv and Harry are stronger than Terminator. Like, genuinely, John Connor wouldn't stand a fucking chance against these guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie, not a fan. Probably will never watch it again. The first one is the far better film. Yeah. I'd say this is like probably a 3 out of 10 for me.
Oh wow! Okay, you're going critic score. Okay.
Yeah, I went for the throat on that one.
Okay, so Colin, you have a massively out of balance ratio when it comes to the first movie and the second movie. So it's been a while since you've seen this one, or I guess I just assume that. Like, it sounds like it's been a while since you've seen this one. Am I right with that?
Yeah. Like, the more I think about it, I don't think that I've watched this movie in. Like, yeah, I haven't watched it in some time.
Yeah.
And I'm at the top of the show, I said that, you know, for me, the Home Alone franchise ends after this movie. But now I kind of think the Home Alone franchise might end after Home Alone for me. Like, I'm kind of on Joel's side with this movie. Like, I never realized how beat for beat of a copy it is.
No, neither did I. Yeah.
And it is, like, when you really think about it, kind of insulting to my intelligence as a viewer, I feel like.
Yeah.
And then I just think, as we've talked about it, there's nothing that this movie centers on. There is no moral of this story. There is no moral of this story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just, it was really just, they were like, oh, people really loved all that funny stuff at the end of Home Alone. Let's give them more of that. Like, it's all the...
Without the heart.
Yeah, it's all the pomp without the circumstance. It's all the fluff without, like, any foundation.
Yeah.
And so I used to kind of just, like, lump it in as the two movies are Home Alone, but I can't do that anymore. I actually think this is a bad movie.
Yeah.
Is kind of where I'm going to leave it.
That's fair. Yeah, I echo both of you. Yeah. If you're going to have time to watch a Home Alone movie, you might as well make it the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the second one, it has its moments. It really does have its moments where, like, I because I've got this new love affair with Tim Curry over the last couple months, I mean, I was so excited to see him. And, like, I mean, there is the moment there, too, where, like, he smiles and it dissolves into the Grinch, or the opposite way, the Grinch dissolves into his smile. And, you know, like, I love those moments. I liked him as a character, but other than that, it didn't add a whole lot. Like I said, when you were talking there, yeah, it takes away the heart of the first movie and leaves you with everything else, beat for beat. And I agree. For me, yeah, this could be like a 4 out of 10 movie, 40% movie, 30% movie, like somewhere in there. It's, if you're going to watch one Home Alone movie this Christmas season, make it Home Alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I enjoyed last year's viewing experience so much more than this year's.
Oh, yeah. Like, I found myself having to pause the movie and, like, go back and like, rewatch scenes because I was getting so bored that I was zoning out. Yeah. Like, I was like, it's just the same.
Yeah.
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 Well, there we go. That is Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. Are you going to rush off and watch Home Sweet Home Alone when it comes out?
I'd rather gargle hot black.
Maybe that will be one of the things the crooks have to do in that movie. Who knows? You have to push the envelope somehow. A big, huge thank you to our special guest for this week, Joel Sims. I always ask it, but you never actually want to promote anything. But, you know, any last words of wisdom for us on our way out here, Joel, over the theme music?
Don't watch this movie. I don't know. Do something nice for the Christmas season. Tell your mother you love her. Send her something extra special this year. Reuse wrapping paper. Save the environment. I'm now an eco warrior. This is my stand.
There we go.
I'm gonna be the next Leo DiCaprio. That's my big eco warrior movement.
Nice. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is, well, tell people, share our posts. Word of mouth is so important for a podcast trying to get noticed. There's a million podcasts out there, and so we need people telling other people about our show to say, hey, you know what, there's this show over there you might like, check it out. Help us build an audience. Or if you want to go above and beyond to help us, go over to Apple Podcasts or whatever app it is you listen to your podcasts on. Give us 5 stars. The science behind those algorithms is so confusing, but giving us 5 stars in a review, it just drives us up the charts, helps us get noticed. Or if you want to be a monetary support of this show and donate to us, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become an executive producer of our show, and get a shout out just like executive producer Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. There you can find links to all of our podcast episodes as well as our social media. We have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have Twitter. Go on there and give us some likes, comments, shares, all that good stuff. And if you want to, drop us a line at drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne, all one word, at gmail.com, and let us know what movies you used to like, and maybe you'll find us talking about it on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thanks for listening, and join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.